Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of CookieCast. So in CookieCast, it's the wrestling podcast getting over. That's right, so soon after WrestleMania, the two-night event, the monster that is WrestleMania, we're back with another pay-per-view. And this time it's Backlash. European-flavoured Backlash, no less. We've got all the predictions from WrestleMania to go through, and we are predicting the matches for Backlash. Before we get started, please do consider like, share, subscribe, and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. And obviously, I think we know at this point the biggest one there is to share the podcast around, get it in the hands of the people that love wrestling so they can enjoy it too. Right, let's get started. Here we go. This is CookieCast. Getting over.
Recording in progress.
Hello, welcome, welcome, welcome to the home of all things WWE on CookieCast. It's the Getting Over podcast. Now, joining me on this episode for all of the post-WrestleMania haze and shenanigans, we've got Mr. Paul Williams.
Hello.
And we have Mr. Andy Cook.
Sorry, I got distracted trying to make the WWE symbol with my fingers, as the YouTube watchers will know. for the audio listeners, it was hilarious.
I mean, if there was ever an excuse for you to log on right this second and press that subscribe button, that's it right there. So yeah, we're a man down. Mr. Moore not able to join us this time, but we will get on, and hopefully Matt will be back with us again next time around. So yeah, WrestleMania has been and indeed gone. Unfortunately, it's that kind of hangover period of, is wrestling going to go back to being a bit like again for a while, or is it not? But we will get to that, because we are coming at you with some Backlash predictions later on in the episode. But we'll start where we always start, with some predictions title. And while we're at it, we'll go through a little bit of WrestleMania stuff. So coming into WrestleMania, Matt was the champion. He won it with a tie break last time out, if you remember. But this time around, he's got two nights worth of predictions to try and cling on to that gold. So starting with night one, the first prediction we had for night one was the Lucha match, effectively. Rey and what was supposed to be Dragon Lee versus Dominic Mysterio and Santos. Now, Dragon Lee obviously got replaced in the match with Andrade, but Matt was the only person to predict that match correctly, so getting his title defense off with a win. The next one was the Naomi Jade Bianca versus Damage Control. Everybody picked up the points here, because everybody expected Bianca's team to win, and indeed they did. The match after that was that I have on the card was the tag team title six-pack ladder match challenge. Now, this was always going to throw up a little bit of an anomaly, because we were predicting the winners of individually the Raw and SmackDown straps. However, Matt did himself all the good in the world, because he was the only one of us that got both predictions right. So he predicted that Awesome Truth would win the Raw tag team titles, and Theory and Waller would take home the SmackDown titles. Now, since WrestleMania, if you've not been keeping up, if you have been keeping up, you might have noticed that those belts look a little bit different these days. So the former, now Raw tag team titles, have now been renamed the World tag team titles. Think back maybe to around, 2004 time. That seems to be, they've just basically gone back to those names. So the SmackDown ones are therefore the WWE tag team titles. Next one, we all got right. Jey Uso beat his brother Jimmy. And then came the Intercontinental title prediction. You all had Gunther. I had Sami Zayn. So I gained a little point there. And then, no surprises, for the last two matches that we had on the predictions for night one, everybody picked Rhea Ripley. She won. Everybody picked Rock and Roman. They also won. So after night one, out of a total of 9 possible points, Matt had 8 after night one. I had 6. Paul and Andy bringing up the rear, not Ripley, with 5 points. So it was all looking good for Matt going into night two, thinking he's on a bit of a roll. And then night two came and there were 6 possible points. First match, Matt got wrong, as did Paul, as did I. Andy was the only one to predict that the Pride would beat Final Testament. Also, what the hell is that booking? Very strange. You guys all had LA Knight to win, as indeed he did. I absolutely crapped the bed by picking AJ Styles. Stupid decision. Stupid decision. Andy was the only person to predict that Logan Paul would retain his title, which I had to double check the recording, and indeed that I'd written it down correctly when I saw that Andy was the only person to predict Logan Paul on that one. But yeah, points your way. And then on the next match, there was absolutely no chance that we weren't all picking up a point, as Bayley picked up the women's title from Io Sky. Now, that left us with the two men's title matches. The World Heavyweight title match. Seth defending against Drew. We all picked Drew to win, which he did. So we all got a point, but I mean, really, those points were probably only really, like, what, valid for about 5 minutes afterwards, as Damian Priest, Senior Money in the Bank, whacked out his massive purple briefcase and cashed in that contract. So Damian Priest, now the World Heavyweight Champion, coming out of WrestleMania, only the second person to ever do it. And the person that did it first was involved in the match before, so... That led us to what the entire last 3 years has been building up to, with Roman defending against Cody in what was now a Bloodline Rules match. This was mental. Absolutely mental. It's been described online since as the Avengers Endgame of WWE, which is absolutely bang on.
Have you seen the cut of it? Where they've put the Endgame music over the top.
No, but I feel like I need to find this
now. Oh, it fits so well. It's so good. It's like...
So, we had Bloodline Rules, therefore there was no rules, so therefore we knew straight away that at some point Jimmy Uso was turning up. So Jimmy Uso turns up, and then Jey Uso turns up, and they take each other out, and that nullifies all that. Then Solo Sikoa comes out. And then out of absolutely nowhere, here comes John Cena to come and save the day. Now, obviously, Cena and Solo Sikoa did have a bit of a tete-a-tete last year when it was Crown Jewel. Solo Sikoa beating John Cena at that pay-per-view. So that kind of tied together quite nicely as well, and a bit of a callback. All good. So that leaves Cody with somebody to help him, right? Well, no, because here comes everybody's favourite, Diarrhea Dwayne, with his final boss entrance and his 85th weight belt of the weekend to come and take out John Cena. So they had a bit of a ding-dong. All good. That's them two gone, except for The Rock was left standing in the ring to help Roman. So they're like, oh, well, he is going to retain it after all. And then there was a huge power cut, miraculously, just at the exact time it was needed in the middle of Philadelphia. And when the power came back on, after a gong, there stood The Undertaker to deliver a choke slam all the way to, at least the ring mat, taking out The Rock. That's all set. Then what else happened after that? Because there was the bit with, I can't remember how Seth got in there now.
So I think he came down.
They played the Shield music, didn't they?
He came down before The Undertaker.
Yeah, he was before that and got just taken out.
That was pretty cool, though.
That was the bit with the. That was the Superman punch, I think, as he was getting in the ring with the chair. But yeah, then it was. Then it was Senor Taker.
That was right, and then there was the point where Seth was then climbing back into the ring, slid the chair in. Roman had the chair and was caught between hitting Cody with it and carrying on, or taking his revenge after, what, 10 years ago now? And finally taking out Seth Rollins for what he did at the dismantling of the Shield. And he swung for Rollins, connected with Rollins, and then ate three crossroads. And your new undisputed WWE champion, Cody Rhodes. So story finished, I guess. In terms of what you've seen from it, any particular highlights? Not necessarily just that match, but of WrestleMania in general.
I think I sent a message at one point saying that I tried to get a picture of when I was watching it, and I tried to get a picture of my arm with like all the hairs standing on end, and I couldn't quite get the right angle because honestly, I don't think there's been much that's been quite as electrifying as that whole section. It was like, just that was the only way I could describe it. And I know that rubs a little too close to certain people, but it was just, it was literally like somebody was sending electricity into your body. It was just like, that is, I'd seen a video, a guy's wife had videoed him watching it, and he was just bawling, just pure tears of joy. And it was like, yeah, I'm with you there. That was, it was pretty awesome. I know, certainly from this podcast alone, there have been times where we've been sat like, oh, it was this huge main event, it was this huge pay-per-view, it was this huge whatever, and what a complete and utter letdown it was. And, you know, this person won again and this person didn't win, and what a disappointment and stuff. But I think they hit a high mark. So, personal opinion.
The absolute purist in me was like, this is overbooked to hell. But then it was like, ah, screw it, this was awesome. Like, I like the fact that they were constantly calling back to stuff that had happened on the way through. And that's like long-term storytelling that's been missing for such a period of time. People are like myself included, are impatient. They didn't want Roman necessarily to be champion for as long as he was. But having had that, and then the payoff that we effectively got in the end, has been completely worth it. Part of me is even now a little bit disappointed that by the way that the timings of the year worked, and they couldn't have it so that he beat Hogan's record, because that would be a right kick in the nuts. But I'd be very surprised if we see anything like that now for years. I can't see that we're going to get anything sort of much past a year.
No, because the other thing would be that anything they do now to try and recapture it, or to try and like emulate or anything like that, will diminish it. It needs to stand as the peak of that mountain, and it needs to be that steady sort of like, not decline in the sense of the brand declining. I feel it needs to just sort of take a few steps down, level out, and then they can start another slow build or a build back up to something. But yeah, definitely nothing for a year, more possibly. I mean, you know, you started it by saying 3 years in the making. Yeah, people are impatient, but I think every single one of the people who were like, oh, come on, you know, it's boring now or whatever, will have been, you know, on their feet, will have been cheering, will have been happy in some way from that event. Honestly, when the lights went out, all I could think was, well, there's no way, because he is retired, so. And then the gong hit, and I was just like, Jesus. And I was like, it's got to be a gag, it's got to be something, like, it's a trick, it's whatever. And I am always blown away by, in a venue like that, in a setting like that, how dark they can make it. How pitch black in that building they can make it. It's like, they, you know, they certainly know what they're doing when it comes to stuff like that.
As well, to take everybody off guard quickly enough that it's not spoiled by everybody getting their phone out and stuff like that. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed a lot of it. The fallout from it as well, all the emotional side of Cody and all the rest of it was really well handled. The Rock, despite the fact that he's now gone away for a little bit, I believe it's because he's got another film.
He's doing an MMA movie, so he's in MMA training mode.
And I think as well he's doing the voiceover for Moana 2.
He's come back from Maui, hasn't he?
I mean, let's hope that he doesn't get the two confused for everybody's sake that has small children. But he's already teased that when he comes back, whether Cody is champion or not, unfortunately he did use the phrase, "I'm coming for you," which was probably enough to make my childish brain go. So he will be back, to the surprise of absolutely nobody. But again, he's confirmed it. When the film word dries up, he'll be back. Also, though, as well, he did throw a little bit Undertaker's way after a little chokeslam segment. Surely not.
Well, I think that the whole point of the Undertaker's Hall of Fame speech was that he closed it with the fact that he was retired, but then he just sort of turned and said, "Never say never," and then just left. So, plus at the end of the day, he's a businessman, and even though Vince is gone, and obviously they were basically synonymously linked for 30 years or whatever. If the money's right, if the creative's right, if he feels he's in a position where his body will allow him to do it. If it's just a 5 minute, 6 minute sort of cameo match or whatever, and it makes sense, I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm all for him not, to be honest. I don't mind the what he did at WrestleMania, but I don't need to see a 15 minute Undertaker match ever again. Unless it's on the network, clearly.
Plus, I think as well, he never really got his retirement thing, did he? Because the retirement prior to his Hall of Fame stuff was done in the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
So he never really got that one final pop in front of a big stadium crowd and stuff like that, which maybe he's never got. So.
In terms of sort of match of the night from both nights, as much as the tag match in night one that set up the Bloodline rules was all right as well. I think that the match of the night was probably the ladder match for me. I thought there was some good spots in that. Really well done. Really pleased that R-Truth got himself a title at WrestleMania. That was awesome. No pun intended. But yeah, I really liked that match. I thought that was really well put together. Obviously, night two, I feel a bit sorry for Drew and Seth on the basis that they were always going to be on the same card as the Cody Roman match, because I thought they put on a hell of a show as well, and particularly with all the ending and with CM Punk at ringside and everything else, I thought that was done pretty well as well. The only if I have to sour it slightly, because let's be honest, this is me, I'm a little disappointed with the Jay and Jimmy Uso match. It didn't really seem to flow and it didn't click very well. Obviously the winner was correct and all the rest of it, but I can't help but feel that they'll feel like there's sort of a bit left on the table, and I wouldn't be surprised if they revisit that again at some point.
I think he did an interview with Jay, so he did an interview with someone, I can't remember who it was, but he didn't exactly come out and say it, but he basically sort of intimated that when they were sort of getting ready to go out there, they were told that maybe if they had 15 minutes, they now had 8 minutes or something like that. So I think their time got majorly cut, probably because the... was it on the first night?
Yeah.
I don't know which match will have gone long.
But might have been the ladder match, to be fair.
the ladder match probably went a bit longer than it should, so they probably felt they needed to cut some time back, and that was probably not the match that was like the least important, but they probably felt they could steal the time from and stuff like that. And he said himself that he felt it didn't deliver and stuff like that. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, given the current storyline that they're both in, I would be surprised to see them back together at some point, and then you can split them back off again.
Yeah. So, well, alluding to sort of what's happened. So what's happened since WrestleMania? A few things. Few kind of important things as well. Firstly, however, on the list I have is Rhea Ripley's injured shoulder. There are rumours that it's from a backstage brawl from Raw the night after WrestleMania. I would argue slightly that her shoulder was already weakened by carrying the goddamn company for the last 12 months.
Hey.
She has been the standout by an absolute country mile and a bit. The exact diagnosis of what's wrong with her shoulder, I don't think, has been officially revealed. But every report I've seen has just said that she could be out for up to a year. I don't know if that's with the basis to think, oh, she's going to be out till next April. And then, ta-da, traditional Royal Rumble surprise. We'll see. But it's bad news all round, because she's been great. And I worry for the Judgment Day without her. Particularly now that Priest is champion, I think that there is a chance that they may not even be together as we know it by the time that she gets back. Since she did get injured, they obviously had to crown a new champion. This is a little bit of me grumbling, because they had a chance here. They stick a Battle Royal in. Anybody could literally win that match. They could make somebody into like a new star. But instead, Becky Lynch won. So now, now we've got no extra star. It made all the sense in the world to give it to Liv Morgan for my money, because of the whole revenge tour thing, and it kind of fit that narrative particularly well. But not only just the women's division, though, now that she's gone, yes, they've got Cody. They haven't got Seth, because he's gone off for his knee operation as expected. Drew's kind of bubbling under, but they haven't really got anybody else that's like that echelon to me now at the moment, like of that level. Obviously, Punk's still part-time wrestling because he's still coming back from his arm injury. I just wonder who will be next, basically. I mean, is anybody going to use her absence to sort of take that step up?
They obviously had long term plans for that title, and obviously whatever those plans were,
I'm not sure,
didn't fit in with anyone not named Becky Lynch on that side of things. So they've obviously had to just pivot and just go, right, no one's ready. Who can we give it to? Oh, is Charlotte still injured? She is now. Oh, okay. You know that holiday we promised you? Yeah, just cancel that. Come back and we'll put the belt on you.
But like, why not somebody like, and this might sound a bit strange to begin with, why not somebody like Zelina Vega? She won Queen of the Ring the first ever. They did nothing with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that problem. You've got that issue though. Like, we would like to see that. A lot of the crowd would probably like to see that, but. Is it that issue of if you do put it on them and they absolutely tank and bomb, are you potentially killing them more in the long term as a character?
I suppose, but then with the prestige that she brought to the title by giving it to somebody that people are a bit, not necessarily 100% sick of, but like are a bit overseeing, like it kind of takes a bit of shine off the title as well. So
yeah, I agree.
Since then, as well, we also have had the latest installment of the WWE Draft. Started on SmackDown last week and finished on Raw in the week that we're recording. A full list of draftees can obviously be found on WWE.com. I'm not going to go through every single one of them individually because, let's face it, you need to finish listening to this before Backlash begins. Some of the highlights, however, Well, first thing to note is that Cody is now exclusive to SmackDown, winning the sort of newly renamed but not kind of WWE Championship. The going with the dropping the Universal element, I believe, and sticking with Undisputed WWE Championship. So he's going to be exclusive to SmackDown. Damian Priest, obviously, is World Heavyweight Champion, will therefore be exclusive to Raw. The only champions that were eligible in the draft to move brands were the women's tag team champions, which makes sense because, in theory, they can move between shows anywhere. They're the only one that have that freedom officially. But yeah, Monday Night Raw, Drew and CM Punk are staying where they were. Imperium have been split up. So Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser are staying on Raw, whilst Giovanni Vinci has moved to SmackDown. This also does follow the Ludwig Kaiser turning on Giovanni Vinci after they lost to New Day. And probably the other highlight for the Raw picks was the return of Braun Strowman after a good portion of time out following neck surgery. He returned looking in decent nick as well, so fingers crossed that he finally gets that run in front of fans that's not beating Goldberg in front of nobody.
Tried to pick a fight with Patrick Mahomes, didn't he?
Well, Logan Paul got a little bit of an assist from Patrick Mahomes. Have you seen it?
Don't even get me started on that.
Did you see the pictures of JD McDonough from afterwards by any chance? So, in a match where Logan Paul and Judgment Day were kicking around, I can't remember who it was they were hanging on to. Judgment Day were trying to hold somebody in place for Logan Paul to punch in the face using Patrick Mahomes' Super Bowl rings. And they ducked, and he fully cocked JD McDonough in the forehead. Now, I know what you're thinking. It's JD McDonough. He could have been aiming anywhere, and it would have still hit that guy in the forehead. But the pictures afterwards, there was definitely a lot of imprint and there was definitely a lot of bruising to the point where you can nearly read, I think, what was on the ring. So, yeah. Sorry for him a little bit. But, yeah. The SmackDown picks. Should move on to the SmackDown picks. The first overall pick in the draft, full stop, was Bianca Belair. And she was drafted by SmackDown. Kevin Owens, Jade Cargill, Randy Orton, LA Knight, Nia Jax, and The Bloodline were all drafted to SmackDown. However, the Bloodline wasn't Jimmy Uso and Roman Reigns, as Roman excluded himself, withdrew his eligibility. Jimmy Uso wasn't part of the draft because he'd been taken out by new Bloodline member Tama Tonga, which is the son of Haku in real life, who is widely renowned for being a proper hard bastard. His son looks like a chip off the old block, to be fair. So the Bloodline now consists still of Paul Heyman, Solo Sikoa, and Tama Tonga. We did have a few NXT call-ups as well. So Ilya Dragunov, Lyra Valkyria have both gone to Raw. Carmelo Hayes and Blair Davenport have gone to SmackDown. An odd one for me was that Bron Breakker moved from SmackDown to Raw, so he only recently got signed to SmackDown from NXT, and then they've moved him anyway. So that's one to watch. I presume that they'll build him up a little bit on Monday nights now. In terms of the moves, is there anybody amongst those that you think will particularly struggle, and anybody that you particularly think will do well in their new or existing homes, I guess?
I don't know why.
I just felt a bit of much of a muchness for me. You just, I'd want to see it more sort of in full before I make a judgment on it personally.
The one for me that feels weird is Randy Orton, because I always have Randy Orton in my head as Raw. Like, it's just always that Randy Orton Raw sort of, but...
I mean, no, it's a joke, but I'll leave it. I don't know, he has spent a lot of time on SmackDown, though, because, I don't know, Randy Orton wasn't really one that had factored for me. Regardless of where he ends up, because he's now like the tenured veteran, I can't see him on either show particularly having like a world heavyweight title run at the moment. It just seems to be sort of treading water a little bit. in terms of the ones I mentioned earlier, I think that Raw is completely set up for Gunther now to just run through the field, and he will absolutely smash it all to bits. In the opposite way, though, moving Giovanni Vinci on his own to SmackDown, I would not be surprised if that guy is looking for a job within the next 12 months. Feels a little bit odd. Unless they've got plans to pair him up with somebody else. Or he might be a secret master on the microphone that we just don't know about at this point. But I would worry a little. But yeah, that sort of brings us to the end of our wrap-up of what's gone down over the last few weeks. And very nicely leads us on to what's about to happen this weekend, WWE Backlash. So whilst we reset ourselves and prepare to bring those predictions to you with a match listing, you just sit there, don't even blink, we'll be back in less than a second. That's it.
Recording in progress.
See, not even a second, but maybe it was a second. All right, just, yeah, don't go on about it. Anyway, it is time for some WWE Backlash predictions. So WWE actually hits Europe this weekend and comes to us live from Lyon in France for Backlash. Whilst it is much, much nearer, it also means that if you're not going, if you're not lucky enough to be in France, possibly listen to this, it will be on TV a little bit earlier in the UK as well, as it should start around 6 p.m. UK time, which would be lovely stuff. And as always with the Getting Over podcast, the match information we're about to go through is taken from WWE.com and it is correct at time of recording. We currently have 5 matches announced for this weekend. I have a little bit of a spoiler. I have primed the boys with a tie break because I feel that we may be predicting a lot of these the same way. So we'll see how we get on. The first match I have on the listing for today's podcast is the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship match, which is the Kabuki Warriors, so Kairi Sane and Asuka as champions, defending against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. We talked about Bianca fighting Damage Control quite a lot for a couple of years, maybe, on and off. It goes all the way back to the start of that group, really. But impressive that's, newcomer.
Was that SummerSlam 22?
Yeah, it's a long time ago now. But yeah, she's, you know, Bianca's been fighting these guys for 2 years. Jade Cargill comes in on her first episode of SmackDown and beats all 3 of them up. So then that eventually led to the match that we had at WrestleMania, where it was Jade, Bianca and Naomi versus Damage Control. Obviously, it went pretty well for them at WrestleMania because Jade and Bianca's team won, and they seem to have formed a bit of a friendship afterwards. So they continued on their quest against Damage Control, and now we have a women's tag team championship match. It's only Jade Cargill's second premium live event pay-per-view match. Now that we're in the Triple H era and we don't have to say sports entertainment anymore, are they going to go back to calling it pay-per-views, do you reckon?
Oh, I really hope so. Anybody that actually looks into any of the tags for this podcast will notice that we at CookieCast do not bend to the will of the premium live event.
That meant me.
Pay-per-view till I die.
Well, on that note, is Jade Cargill going to take her first gold in WWE alongside Bianca Belair, or will Kairi and Asuka manage to get out of France with the titles? I have already put my predictions in the book, so I'm quite happy to go first on this one. I've gone straight for Jade and Bianca. Paul is nodding.
I always think when they go to like a new place for the first time, not that it's the first time ever, as it seems to be the, tick that off on your bingo card if you're listening along. Whilst not the first time ever, blah, 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 but it is their first time on pay-per-view, as were, in France. Seems unlikely that they'll change any of the big belts, so this is a very easy sort of make the crowd happy that they see a title switch match, if that makes sense.
And Andy's nodding, are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, 100% title change straight off the bat.
Do you know what the other side of it is for me? Is that because, as we just discussed with the draft, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill are two big names. So if they get to use them on both shows, that only works as a benefit for me as well.
True. The only thing that did sort of crop into my head was maybe you have the idea that they don't win and that Bianca is the one that takes the pin or costs them the match, and then you've got the sort of the beginning of the what I'm sure is the plan of the inevitable, those two split up, they have the match at either SummerSlam, WrestleMania, Survivor Series, one of the big pay-per-views, I would imagine is the plan.
That was my thought as well, because it's like, I don't think that they've got it in them to almost like let the cat out of the bag this early. That's definitely where it's going.
But
you know, are they gonna after spending 3 years building up a story previously? Are they gonna spaff this one in 2 weeks? Do you know, like, not so sure. We shall see. Okay, yeah. Well, as I predicted, we all predicted the same on that one. So we shall move along to the second one on our list. Second on the list is Randy Orton and Kevin Owens in a tag team match against the Bloodlines, so Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga. As mentioned before, on SmackDown after WrestleMania, Solo Sikoa set the ground for a new bloodline when he attacked Jimmy Uso. Must have hit him fairly hard because he didn't even appear in the draft. But he also brought in the new member. I was going to say new blood, but you know, Paul doesn't like funny. Anyway, Tama Tonga helped obliterate Uso to the shock of Paul Heyman, seemingly, at the time. The following week, Tama Tonga smashed into Kevin Owens' car and then proceeded to absolutely beat the tar out of him. The week after that, Kevin Owens obviously wanted some bit of revenge. But he was on the end of another beatdown until, out of nowhere, Randy Orton steps up to even the odds. And now, we've got ourselves a tag team match player. Is Kevin Owens going to get that revenge with the Viper on his side, or does the new bloodline pick up where the old guard took off? And Paul, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I also feel it's prudent at this point to point out that this team is obviously going to be called Team RKO. So I can't take any credit for that. I heard it on a YouTube clip that I listened to earlier in the day. Yes, very very good, very nice, happy happenstance coincidence there. Before we go into the match, the Tama Tonga. Son of Haku, you said earlier, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah. I can see why, because that guy is absolutely shredded to fuck.
He spent the last few years in Japan, hasn't he? He's been in New Japan for a while.
Yeah.
I think he's been part of all the Bullet Club setup,
yeah,
he, as well.
He was definitely in the Bullet Club. I'd seen something that apparently when he went to Japan, WWE tried to get him then, before he went to Japan, and apparently he said no. I think he turned it down because he felt that he needed the sort of the move to Japan to sort of build his like character sort of development and stuff like that. I think he probably felt he would do better there than he would do in NXT or wherever they'd end up putting him and stuff like that. This is another one of those ones where in old WWE, this guy's just come in. There's absolutely no chance he loses this match. So he'll end up getting beaten. Because who sees that coming? But I just think to sort of re-establish Solo as the sort of, if there's no Roman there, this guy's like the new sort of head of the bloodline. He's the guy running things. You've got the sort of the argument there with him and sort of looking like he's going to literally shit his pants any time he goes near him at the moment. Yep. So to sort of further the storyline that Solo is like the new head honcho, you can't really have him lose for the next 6 months or so. So I've got I've got them down to win.
Yep. Andy?
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I don't see them rolling out someone who has never wrestled to then go, and he lost. It's a completely pointless exercise. So I don't see it going any other way.
Same. I've got Bloodline as well. So again, as I predicted, we've done the same. The only other way they can go with it is if, for whatever reason, Bloodline lose, it'll be by DQ, and it'll be because they're just beating the shit out of them. That's the only other way it's going to go for me. They're not going to let any of them get beat.
I could kind of see that, because that's another sort of surefire way of like enforcing the fact that they're like not there to sort of make friends. They're just there to sort of like destroy the territory, as it were. And stuff like that. The only other thing that sort of could play into this is the fact that there's all these rumours that they've signed Jacob Fatu as well, who's another one of the sort of the family, because as we've been told for centuries upon centuries, if you're Samoan and a wrestler, they're all related. Apart from Samoa Joe, because he's apparently just on his own. So, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Jacob Fatu when he does make his debut, because he sounds like he's another beast and stuff like that. So there's obviously something in the waters in Samoa that's just, you know.
If they hadn't just brought in Tama Tonga, I would have been like, this is the weekend. And almost like when it was Clash at the Castle that me and Matt went to, when Solo debuted out of absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, they could pull the same thing again, basically, like, either, you know, music hits and he comes down to the ring, or appears through the crowd, or like from under the ring, whatever it might be. It would be a good time, but I'd like, it's the first match between them and like Team RKO, if you like. So it's like, doesn't really mean anything yet, does it? It's just a match because they had a bit of an argy badgy in the car park. Right, okay, so yeah, clean sweep again. So we'll move on. The Women's Championship match, the WWE Women's title. So Bayley will be defending her title against Naomi and Tiffany Stratton in a triple threat match. So as we know, Bayley picked up the title from Io at Mania. And she also tried to pick her first opponent in Naomi. The two were set to face off on SmackDown. Tiffany Stratton interjected instead. Set up a bit of an impromptu match with herself and Naomi. Naomi won. So the following week, Naomi finally gets her title match against Bayley, except for Tiffany Stratton came out and interrupted it and like took them both out. It was then suggested to get a clear winner, there would be a number one contenders match between Tiffany Stratton and Naomi. And then the draft happened and Nia Jax came down and just like absolutely laid everybody out. No clear winner. Triple threat match ensues. However, the thing that I find confusing about this is why then it's not a fatal four-way match and Nia Jax isn't in the mix as well. That was a bit odd for me. Regardless, we have a triple threat match. So who wins the title and who will be left lying in France? So you see, I told you Paul doesn't like funny. Andy, do you want to take this one?
Say it with me, boys. Come on. After three. One, two, three. There's absolutely no way. It's Bayley. It's absolutely going to be Bayley. Just to take the belt to then hand it over. No.
I agree. I've got the same. I can't even really see what story is going to come out of this other than the fact that they're going to extend the scenario. I think I don't know where it's going. Tiffany Stratton's really got over with the crowd, despite the fact that she's like a bad guy bimbo Barbie sort of element to her. People have really got behind her, and I don't know what I genuinely don't know what they're going to do. She's good at what she does. She's her finishing move is not named the prettiest moonsault for nothing. She does that pretty well. I just don't know. I can't see what's going to happen other than the fact that I think Bayley keeps the title. I think it's Naomi's not really done a great deal since she returned, other than being part of the team that won at WrestleMania. Bit too early for Tiff, so Bayley is for me. Paul?
Yeah, I think we said it earlier, it's, you can't, of your sort of your, it's unfortunate, obviously, the things happened with Rhea Ripley, because the fact that all of your four main champions have changed, three on the same day, and one enforced 8 days later, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So you've already basically changed all of your world champions. You're not going to be doing it again, otherwise people start to say, what's the crack here? Is that? I think the main thing that will probably come out of it is you'd imagine that Naomi probably takes the loss, which then furthers the fact that Stratton will say, well, I never lost, so I feel like I need a one-on-one match, and that's what takes the storyline further on. And you probably run out to the next pay-per-view and they go from there and stuff. But that's, yeah. I'd be very surprised if Bayley lost as well.
Yeah. Okay, no worries. So again, we've all picked the same. Strap in, because it's going to happen twice more on this podcast. I can pretty much guarantee that. So the World Heavyweight Championship match, we have Damian Priest defending against Jey Uso. So we mentioned earlier how Priest cashed in to become a champion. But why isn't he defending against Drew? Well, Jey Uso won the number one contender's Fatal 4-Way match to earn the opportunity instead. Might have something to do with Pepsi Phil distracting Drew during that match. It's later emerged as well that Drew has been working hurt since WrestleMania, which is kind of ironic given his whole build to WrestleMania about how frail CM Punk has been. Drew also has recently re-signed a new deal with WWE, so he's there for the long haul now. He was giving it big licks on the Instagram with Triple H showing off that he's signed. Diarrhea Duane sent him a lovely claymore sword as a welcome gift as well for re-signing. But that brings us back around again. So yeah, it's Jey Uso that's going to be taking on Damian Priest instead. There's absolutely no denying that Jey is the one that is the star is on the rise, and he's definitely got a singles title reign in his future. But is it going to start this weekend, Andy?
Nope.
Yeah, again, it's one of those situations that's not going to be a thing where they put a belt on someone to then just move it a matter of weeks later. I didn't want to allude to anything too early on, but I've given my title change, my only title change of these predictions. So yes, there's no changing of the guard this time.
Paul?
I mean, you absolutely nailed it. I mean, it's definitely one of those cards where, yes, I think pretty much everyone going to this one knows exactly what's going to happen. Yeah, taking it off, like, it's not to say that Jay's not ready. It's more the fact of Priest's not ready to lose, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you beat him now, you kill any sort of credibility that will be in him as a believable sort of top heel champion. It completely wastes the fact that you've used the Money in the Bank, not already, but you've used it and it's gone. It can't be, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak. And I think if we sort of like flash forward, I was going back to the sort of the draft thing, I was kind of surprised that McIntyre didn't end up on SmackDown in hindsight, but it now makes me more convinced that he'll be getting the title at Clash at the Castle.
No, I think the injury might have thrown a a spanner into that, possibly. But yeah, as Paul has alluded to, one thing that I was a little remiss in not mentioning, that this is the first of three pay-per-views in a row that don't take place in the United States or North America in general. So we've got this weekend is in France, as we've said. Then we've got Clash at the Castle in June. And then I believe July is Bash in Berlin. Is that the name it was given? But
there's the King and Queen of the Ring.
Oh yeah, as well.
That's also thrown in between as well, and that's obviously in Saudi. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yeah, we've got extra. I'd forgotten all about that. So yeah, they've got a bit of a run outside. They've obviously got a little bit of pandering to the local crowd to do. And Cena's La Resistance are long gone. They haven't got any French locales, have they? So they'll have to stick with the white meat baby faces, as it were. To which Priest necessarily isn't, but I think he's over enough as like part of the Judgment Day, and like as Paul and Andy have alluded to, he ain't losing this early. I think it was good what they did with the Money in the Bank this time, in the respect of. I mean, what had been talked about on here, was he going to be the first person to have it run out? People had almost forgotten that he had it to an extent, and always convinced that he wasn't going to use it necessarily on a world title. But yeah, the way it played out was pretty good, and definitely one of the most memorable ones. So yeah, I can't see him losing either. I've also got Priest. We shall move on. The last match on the card is the undisputed WWE Championship. So Cody Rhodes defending against AJ Styles. So was the story finished, or did it just begin? We find out this weekend when Cody makes his first proper defence. There's not a house show four times in Europe in the last couple of weeks. LA Knight and AJ Styles faced off in a WrestleMania rematch after both of them won respective triple threats to determine the new title contender. Unlike WrestleMania, AJ Styles won. So AJ Styles was happy to fly all the way to Australia to batter LA Knight with a chair. At least he gets a title shot on his next long-haul adventure. A point that I learned whilst looking at this, Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles are two of only four men to have held the NWA World title and the WWE title. Any ideas on the other two?
Flair.
Everybody is going to get that one. It's the other one. It's the other one that's the tricky one. Again, it's old school wrestler.
What's his name? Oh God! Oh Christ Almighty! Buddy Rogers.
Correct. Yeah, Paul's got both of them. So, Buddy Rogers and Ric Flair are the other two. Anyway, there's been a bit of a verbal spat. Nothing too meaty about this one for me, other than the fact that AJ has just won the series of matches to become number one contender. But yeah, which of them is going to write the next chapter in France? In a shock to absolutely nobody, Cody Rhodes is winning this match for me. You don't build him up for 3 years to have him piss it away for nothing. Less than a month later, not a chance. So I will make the assumption that I'm going to write Cody for all three of us. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Oh, Paul's either pulling a face or he's got wind.
No, absolutely not. unless it turns out that it wasn't the story in question was an incredibly short story, no. I would like to think that he would do better than one defense WWE champion.
So you're saying all those books that you've read with like a 900-page prelude and a 2-page story isn't the way to go, right?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it would be more of a limerick rather than a story. So
no, they've already done the house shows in Ireland now, so. You're welcome. Right, so yeah, as expected, we've all predicted the exact same way. So regardless of if we get it right or wrong, we're going to come out with the same score. So I thought ahead and asked these guys to predict the match length of Cody versus AJ. Now, obviously, I'm not going to be sat there with a stopwatch when I watch it, but I will find the time to make sure I get the recording. I'm pretty sure that they put the match, the actual bell-to-bell times on Wikipedia. So, at worst, we'll use that. However, if I find out that one of you two has been onto Wikipedia editing the times to your guess, then there'll be trouble, right? So, who would like to go first? Who wants to give me a time span for the match?
I have it written on my phone, so I'll start us off. I'll go for 23 minutes and 38 seconds.
So 23:38 for Paul. Okay. That's in the book. Andy?
I was undecided about going low or high. Both of them were very much either side of Paul's. I'm going to go low, I think. 21 minutes, 20 seconds.
21:20. Okay. I had gone for 24:41. So we're all, like, there or thereabouts. Obviously, if we're including entrances, you could mark it down for pretty much an hour by the time that Cody's pyro's hit about 14 times. But yeah, so I've marked those down. So just to recap, Andy's gone 21:20. Paul has gone 23:38, and I have gone just over a minute later at 24:41. So that's it. The predictions are in. The WrestleMania roundup has been done. Have we got any other business, gents?
Nothing from me, sir.
We good?
No, I don't think I have anything else.
Lovely stuff, then. All that remains is just to thank you both for joining me on another episode of Getting Over on CookieCast. If you've not already, like I said, pop yourself over to YouTube, look up the CookieCast, and give us a little like, share, and subscribe. Very much appreciated. So thanks again, gents, and we'll see you all next time around.
So there we go, watching into that. Backlash well and truly predicted. Oh, WrestleMania was good. Oh, it was good. It was good. Big thank you for watching. Big thank you for listening. Big thank you for being here. Before you go, click that like button. Share the podcast around. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. What else? Leave a review. 5-star review goes a long way. That's all I'm saying. Check out the website. It's cookiecast.com. There you'll find social media links and an email button. And that way you can send us your predictions. Send us your predictions. If you beat us, you win a prize. Tell you what, how about this? Send your predictions to us, you win a prize. Beat us, win another prize. Two prizes up for grabs right here, right now. How's that? Big thank you for watching. Big thank you for listening. Big thank you for being here. That's it from me. Until next time, I'm going to say bye, and I'll see you then.
You've just listened to another episode of CookieCast. Thanks for listening.